The story of the World War II Holocaust is well known. Nazi Germany attempted to exterminate Jews and other minorities in Europe. 6 million Jews died. Even though we know the story, it's still removed from most of us by several degrees of separation. Not so for our next guest. Irving Lubliner is a retired professor at Southern Oregon University and the son of Holocaust survivors. Irv packaged up what his mother wrote and said about her experiences in a book called Only Hope: A Survivor's Stories of the Holocaust. Irv Lubliner's in the studio with me. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Jeffrey.
The project's been in the works for a very long time. I mean, obviously your mother wrote some of this when she was still alive. She died in 1974. But
right.
But what did it take for you to pull this together?
Well, when she passed, I found these stories, some of them handwritten, mostly typewritten, in some cases found different versions of the same story and had no idea which was the most recent, because these were not the days of word processors where you could see the date that something was amended. So I made some choices about which ones I thought were the most recent, put them in an order that seemed chronological to me based on her experiences from before the concentration camps, during the concentration camps, and then after her release from those camps, and started sharing them with school groups. And this dates back to, she died in 1974, as you said, and I started doing this in the early 80s, sharing them with school groups. And the reactions of teachers, of parents, of students over the years convinced me that these needed to reach a wider audience. And I got a lot of encouragement from people to make sure that happened. And so this book is the fruition of my efforts over quite a few years.
So it sounds like your mother was, not just to audiences, but also at home, therefore, pretty open about what had happened to her.
With everybody except me.
Really?
I had an older brother. He has passed away. But the Holocaust was not something we discussed at home. I think my parents were trying to shelter their two sons from the fear that we might have an experience similar to theirs. And so this was not something we discussed at home. I saw my parents light memorial candles, as is the Jewish tradition each year. My parents would light these memorial candles, and I knew that this was for lost loved ones. But the names of those loved ones were never spoken. I think it was just, there was too much grief involved. So my mother was out doing public speaking about her experiences. She was writing about her experiences, and yet my mother and I never had an adult conversation about what she had gone through.
Well, that's really interesting. So she would give it to audiences. She was telling the story to audiences, but not at home.
Right.
I haven't mentioned her by name yet. Felicia Bornstein Lubliner was your mother's name. She had quite the outsized personality, the way you describe her.
She was amazing. I mean, she came to this country in 1949, and she didn't know any English, and she was dealing with nightmares and grief. And yet, if my school had a parents' talent show, she'd be the one up there doing stand-up comedy, kind of like Zsa Zsa Gabor. And she mastered the English language, and a number of people have told me that they think she mastered the art of writing a short story. And that's what I've put together here, is a series of her short stories that document her experiences. And so what she put into getting over the grief, or at least hiding the grief, and putting her thoughts on paper and in front of audiences that she would speak to, most notably at San Francisco State, there was a class on the Holocaust, and she was an annual speaker there. And so, in addition to the written pieces that I found among her things when she passed, I did find reel-to-reel tapes of her presentations at San Francisco State, and included the transcripts of two of those in the book.
I noticed that there's even a moment when there's a break in the writing because of where the tapes were changed.
Yes, yes. They had to switch over. These were the days of the A side of the tape and the B side of the tape. And so, we lost a few seconds there, and one of them we lose the beginning, unfortunately, and it seems like she's just kind of talking. They caught her in the middle of already having spoken, but there are times where she just sort of breaks down in the middle of her presentation, as I have. I've read these to so many high school students, always with my little box of tissues next to me, and students are so respectful and just realize that for me, I'm sharing stories of loved ones that did not survive, and my mother, who really went through some awful, awful experiences. And those school groups have, one teacher said she's never heard her students be so quiet and well-behaved. And That's what I've witnessed.
Irv Lubliner is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His mother, Felicia Bornstein Lubliner, survived Auschwitz and was liberated with the rest of the camp in 1945. The book that he has collected of her writings about it is called Only Hope, A Survivor's Stories of the Holocaust. If you'd like to join the conversation on the Exchange, phone line is open at 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. The title of the book seems to answer a series of questions, in a sense, you know, Only Hope.
Yes. I chose that title because I've had a lot of time over the years to ask myself, how did my parents survive this? What did they have that got them through and that allowed them to find the strength to live another day? And all I can come up with is that the hope that they could have another life, that they could tell these stories. Not that my father wanted to tell them. My father was very, very quiet on the subject, and I never did hear from him about it. But I think my mother held on to the hope that she would one day be able to tell the world and be a force for good and for not allowing this to happen again. Let me make one correction, mm-hmm. Jeffrey. You said that she was liberated from Auschwitz. Mm-hmm. She was healthy enough to work and thus was shipped out of Auschwitz to another camp. And she was actually liberated from a camp called Gross Rosen. Mm-hmm. And one of the stories is about the day that the prisoners in that camp wake up and just find that the guards have fled and there's really nothing keeping them as prisoners anymore, but there's really no place to go. And that particular story, they find one of the guards and have to decide how they're going to treat the guard who, in many, many ways, mistreated them.
Matilda.
How to treat Matilda. And it's quite a, it's called The Choice because they all, including my mother, had a personal choice to make about what do we do with this guard knowing what she did to us.
And your mother opted, she took a couple of swings, but
she
opted to end it there, though. I mean, this is a sign of some character in your mother, that she was not beyond revenge, at least at the beginning, but then thought better of it as she could feel her humanity returning.
I think the desire to hold on to humanity is one of the biggest themes that I find in the book. There was an effort by the captors to make sure that those who were held captive could not hold on to their humanity. And ultimately, the idea was to work most of them to death. And along the way, to treat them as animals and have them start to sort of lose track of the fact that they are human beings. And I think my mother's desire and those around her to hold on to their humanity and not allow it to be squelched was one of the ongoing struggles that she and others had to deal with.
Your mother wrote about death being cheap at Auschwitz. So all she had to do was give up, and yet she said that I choose to live. You know, this is a very short sentence, but huge in meaning. That this was her resistance for the people who say, why didn't anybody fight back? Why did they put up with being hauled off into trains, sent to camp, sent to the ovens, etc.? And her answer is because the resistance was living.
Yeah. The resistance was living, and it's interesting that you mentioned that passage because when I do readings, that is among the passages that I read to my audiences. She talks about that you could have fought back, but it would be a stupid way to die because you were going to die. You were going to put others at risk because if you went after a guard with your fists or with a stick or whatever, that guard would not only see to it that you lost your lives, but everybody around you would also be punished for your action. And so you would be doing it not just yourself, but many others. And that was viewed as a foolish way to die, at least in my mother's eyes.
So by the time your mother, Felicia Bornstein Lubliner, had gotten to Auschwitz, she had already been through 5 years of war and displacement. What had happened to her family members?
She had some of her family members were taken while the family was still in a ghetto. She did survive two ghettos, and the more I read about ghettos, I come to realize that they were just about as bad as the camps themselves. But some of the family members were taken from the ghettos. She did go to Auschwitz with her mother, and it appears at least one sister, and then they were separated when they got off the train. And she really had no idea where her mother was going and never did see her again. So that was a very, very abrupt She had already lost her father, lost track of her father. But when they got off the train, a very abrupt separation from her mother, and she never saw her mother again. I can only imagine how dreadful that is.
Yeah, it's just, it's almost impossible to think of that kind of a thing happening in our world today, but not entirely impossible, unfortunately. Felicia's description of arriving at Auschwitz is pretty much drenched in the terror of the moment. She describes, for example, the shouting skulls on the other side of a fence and noticing that there are women with shaved heads. In short order, the new arrivals are shaved as well. She writes about laughing about this.
It seemed so otherworldly, and there is something humorous when we see people who have their heads shaved and their ears are more prominent than they would normally be, and it just seemed so strange, and people are dressed in rags, and I think there's sort of a laughing to keep from crying aspect to this. And I think that's one of the themes that my mother carried on through her adult life when she came to this country, as evidenced by things like getting up on stage at my school parent talent shows. You know, she's creating laughter in herself and in her audiences, but I really think inside she was crying so much more than anybody realized. And so I think there's this laughing to keep from crying thing that got her through.
Irv Lubliner, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, his mother, Felicia Bornstein Lubliner, wrote of her experiences at Auschwitz and elsewhere in the Nazi death camp system in the latter days of World War II. He's collected her writings in a book called Only Hope, A Survivor's Stories of the Holocaust, available at onlyhopebook.com. And he's here on the Jefferson Exchange for you to join our conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. I'm impressed with the fact that your mother really was about living, not just existing. It was beyond surviving. I mean, she describes making friends and getting to know people and sharing stories and culture. And do you remember the story of the woman she called Butterfly and,
yes,
and what she did with the crumbs of bread?
Yeah. Butterfly would take crumbs of bread and every crumb was potentially something that was going to keep you alive, but I think one needs something else, some other kind of spark going on in your life to give you the will to live from one day to the next. So in this instance, she was keeping little scraps of bread and then pushing them together and making sort of a clay out of them and then making little tiny figurines. And so these became sort of playthings, little sculptures that were very meaningful and certainly made an impression on my mother, as did other things that Butterfly and her sister did, as evidenced in the story. I think the book is an effort, among other things, it's an effort to bring life to these people that did not live a long enough life. So when she mentions someone, it's an effort to say, this person lives on in my memory, and I hope that this person lives on in the memory of the reader. And so when my mother talks about these people, when I read about them, I try to honor them, think about who they were, that they had dreams, they had families, they had a life, and they shouldn't just be thought of as a number.
No, not at all. And I found myself wondering at some point in reading your mother's writing that wondering how someone on the verge of starving to death could have the brain power to remember things so vividly. But she reveals a short time after I was wondering that in the book that this is really a conscious decision.
It was a conscious decision. I think she sort of compartmentalized. That happened in the past, and I think she didn't want to bring it into our family life. She wanted our family life to be a happy one and not filled with grief. But I think that she had constant reminders through her nightmares. I know from documents that I've read that she was tortured by nightmares and insomnia throughout her life. How she managed to have a fire in the fireplace, which was something I remember growing up with, and yet that I've come to realize through documents that I've read that she was terrified by fire and by smokestacks and chimneys. And so how she managed to compartmentalize, this happened in my past, I want a different future, I want to raise my children in a happy America. And so they really brought us up as American happy kids, and I had a wonderful childhood.
If anybody had the right to have what we call PTSD today, it would have been your parents. And yet your mother went completely in the opposite direction. She refused to dwell on the past. I mean, she lived
outwardly,
with the past.
Outwardly. But I think there are probably many people who do have PTSD, and it affects their dream life. It affects their sleep. It affects various aspects of the way they deal with people. But I think my mother was very determined to outwardly be a very bubbly person. She became a travel agent, and so she was dealing with the public constantly. She used that as a way to get to Israel. She specialized in Israel travel, and knowing that so many Jews made their way to Israel, every time she would go, she would search for friends and loved ones and family members just in the hopes that she might find somebody, be it a cousin, a brother or sister, but that never happened. But she find some cousins.
Once
I got to go, when I was in eighth grade, I got to accompany her on a trip to Israel. But the fact is, she was just constantly dealing with the public and trying to put on the most happy face that she could. And I think she had a lot of people fooled, and they didn't realize the extent to which she was dealing with her grief that I've come to realize by reading certain documents about her health care. But I think she was an amazing woman, and I think she had some amazing stories to tell, and I hope people will get the book and that they'll agree with me.
The amazing woman we're talking about is Felicia Bornstein Lubliner. Her son, Irv Lubliner, collected her writings and public talks in a book called Only Hope, A Survivor's Stories of the Holocaust. You know, there are details in here that I had never heard before. I mean, I knew, you know, we hear about the concentration camp guards and the extreme brutality there, but didn't realize there were also trustees, capos in camp.
Yeah, one of the stories is about a capo, and a capo was a prisoner who was given, in many cases, extra food, perhaps alcohol, perhaps tobacco, and would get these special favors in exchange for keeping other prisoners in line, sometimes for making decisions about which prisoners would live and which prisoners would die. And in this particular story, this capo is not only being ruthless to his fellow prisoners, but is also stealing their rations just to better his own life and just increasing the chances that others will starve. And one of the prisoners goes to the head of the camp and complains about this capo and certainly suffers for it. And it's the story of the interaction between the prisoner who chose to complain and the capo who gets to dole out punishment and kind of demonstrate to the other prisoners, this is what happens when you complain. And I won't reveal any more about what happens in that story.
That's a very good ending.
Many, many students that I've read the stories to have told me that's their favorite. I'll put favorite in quotes because these are not really happy stories, but right. They often tell me that that's the story that they found most impacting. And it's probably the story that leads to the most discussion in high school classrooms where I've read the stories, and we talk about what's the motivation for person A and for person B, and in their interactions, how did those motivations affect them?
And I can see why it would get to that level, because, I mean, here is a prisoner with the power to make life more miserable for other prisoners.
Exactly, and you can imagine the resentment that those other prisoners would have to this person, and yet they, if they want to stay alive, they have to basically submit to his will.
Irv, you talked about the story of the day when everybody woke up at Gross Rosen, was it?
Yes.
And realized that the guards were gone.
Right.
They had taken off because the Allies were advancing, coming close, all that stuff. So the assembled prisoners celebrate their pending liberation. They've got, you know, musical instruments, and they're singing and dancing and all that stuff. I did not realize, though, that there were still efforts to make sure that the prisoners had one final ugly fate that required some intervention.
Yeah, apparently the French prisoners, and the prisoners had been kept separate and they could see each other through the fences, but once there were no guards looking over them, the various prisoners, the men and the women who were separated, the French prisoners, the Italian prisoners, various nationalities, all of a sudden they could all get together and kind of share their experiences, but not only that, share various things that they had. I mean, some prisoners did have things like soap, and others didn't. And so all of a sudden there was this communal sharing of stuff, and they get together and celebrate their new freedom. They don't really know what they're going to do with it. But at one point, somebody bursts in with a sack of sugar, and that was apparently very noteworthy. And my mother mentions on at least two occasions just what sugar has meant to her ever since, because this bag of sugar just being dumped on the floor and everybody just grabbing it by the handful and eating sugar. She says sugar always represented the taste of freedom to her as a result of that particular episode. And I don't particularly remember my mother being a sugar addict, but she certainly mentioned that sugar was, she associated as the taste of freedom.
In the back of the book, you write about your mother's writing intimidating you. Why?
She was such a good writer. She was such a good writer, and I wanted to contribute something. If I was going to publish this, I wanted to either write an introduction or an afterword, and I kept making efforts at this over about a 30-year period, and I would look at my own writing, and it would pale in comparison to hers. The subject matter is so serious, and I didn't experience it, and she did. And so I had a hard time capturing what I felt I wanted to say as the child of somebody who had had these experiences. I know I was impacted by her, but I, looking at myself, I couldn't really understand what that impact was well enough to put it into words. And it was only upon retiring from SOU in 2014 that I realized this project is the most important thing I have yet to complete in my life, and I need to do it. And I hired a writing coach to help me with that. I just realized I didn't really answer a question that you had asked me about when the guards had fled. They did kind of embed sticks of dynamite, and it was the French prisoners who went and found these various explosives, and just they didn't celebrate until everybody could breathe a sigh of relief. That I got kind of nervous there and realized I answered a different question, but not the one you asked. So,
but so your mother wrote in English, though. I mean,
she wrote in English. She must have taken English classes. I was just a little kid at the time, and I don't recall her going to the community college and taking English classes, but it appears she did. This was in Oakland, California, where I grew up. So there seems to be evidence that she was taking classes. I did find one draft of something she'd written not related to the Holocaust. It looked like a paper one would write for a college class that had the instructor's penciled comments. So I know she must have taken classes, and I really think she mastered the language.
It's an impressive work by her and by you collecting it together. The book is called Only Hope, A Survivor's Stories of the Holocaust. They're the stories of Felicia Bornstein Lubliner, as collected by her son, Irving Lubliner, who's been our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. The book at onlyhopebook.com. Irv, thank you so much for sharing this with us.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. We will talk about GMOs in hour two coming up.